What an exciting weekend we've had. We've had a lot of fun, and it's just been it's been what church is about. We're not ordinary when it comes to church, you might say. We look at it in a different way. We look at it more as family. And sometimes family ticks you off. Sometimes you don't want to eat with family. And sometimes things are going good and you want to play games with family. But it's family. And when it's all said and done, you know, when all the chips are down and everybody else has walked away, you've got your family. And that's what God called us to. We can't fix every problem that each one has. We can't solve everything that God is carrying us through. But we can walk with you. It's one of the most controversial, weirdest parts in the Bible. Two times it says something, but it says it two different ways. It looks like it contradicts itself. It says we are to bear one another's burden. The Bible says we are to bear one another's burdens. Okay. But then you read a short passage later and it says, you must bear your own burden. And I'm like, God, well, which is which? He said, Tim, it's both. There's certain things that a person has to deal with themselves. No matter how much you care about them, they have to walk through it. But at the same time, nobody has to walk alone. And so, as a church, that's what we try to do. We hope that this weekend you had a lot of fun. And these guys are going to bring my table out here, if they will, as they're moving out here. I'm going to read a passage of Scripture. I won't keep you hopefully too long because I'm kind of the kids' church, youth, and adult teacher today. We brought everybody in here to do a object lesson style sermon. I can't promise you that all these objects will work. In fact, first service we had some malfunctions. And so if you're a volunteer or asked to help, we will be praying for you. We hope that things will turn out a little better than it did last service. But you guys just be in prayer, not for my anointing, but for my object lessons. And we'll see how far we get. Turn in your Bibles with me to Hebrews, the 11th chapter. And I'm just going to read one verse. And I'm just going to talk from this one verse. Hebrews, the 11th chapter, verse 22. Hebrews 11, verse 22. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is the story of Joseph. I like the story of Joseph because of all the people in the Bible, I relate more to Joseph than I do most anybody else. Not because I've never done anything wrong or nothing like that, but let me explain it this way. When you read about Samson or you read about other people, most of the time we look at that and those are the cool stories. Or Peter cussing and running through his life and doing his thing. But me, I grew up most of my life feeling like I didn't really have a testimony. I really didn't have anything to tell anybody. I mean, I wasn't a perfect kid. I did some things, and I've talked about that in my sermons and stuff. But most of the time, most people would say, that's a good kid. That's a good young man. I was the kind of person that you'd want your daughter to date. I would bring her home on time. I was good. I wouldn't take advantage. I was just a good kid. And when I read the story of Joseph, it catches me. Let me read this one scripture and we'll jump into this. It says, by faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones. Now, I want to read it from the Amplified because from the Amplified, it kind of gives you a little more understanding of what that's trying to say. He said, activating by faith. In other words, Joseph activates his faith when nearing the end of his life, referred to the promise of God for the departure of the Israelites out of Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his own body. Joseph, even at the time of his death, was still seeing dreams. We always talk about Joseph's dreams. I always get tickled when people talk about, well, you know, Joseph had a dream. No, Joseph had dreams. Joseph didn't dream just only one day that he would save the people. Joseph dreamed at the end of his life, Israel leaving. His whole life was a life of dreams. His whole life was living from one dream to the next dream to the next. It was reaching one and saying, you know what, God just gave me another. I understand that. And people who hang around me understand. I have ADDDDD. And a lot of that is not bad. I think a lot of people that are diagnosed with ADD or whatever that type of mentality is, I think a lot of it is they're just dreamers. When I was in school, it was hard for me to focus. It was hard for me to, not because I was trying to ignore anybody. It's just my mind could get on a pencil and I could see a pencil and all of a sudden, man, I could dream a whole world around a pencil. When I was growing up, I played with socks. Don't tell nobody this. We'll cut this from the video. I played with socks. I would take my dad's black socks and my white socks, and they were on different football teams. And I could fold them. I told you, don't laugh. I ain't going to tell you the story. I'd fold them down and have them, you know, folded down, and I could take my hands. That was the arms. And I would sit there and have them all lined up as football players, all in position. I could sit there for hours, days, and just pretend. Because to me, to dream it was as powerful as doing it. It was all in the same step. If I could dream it, I could accomplish it. That was part of me believing I could play football, and I did later in high school and other things. It all started with those socks, and what those socks could do, I could do. I understand Joseph. There's a burden that comes with dreaming. There's a burden that comes with believing something when nobody else sees it. There's a burden of saying, even as you're an old person and people are looking at you and saying, you know, they're old, unless, you know, you can't pay attention to what they're saying. And he's sitting there looking at his sons and saying, listen to me, boys. I'm going to be dead shortly. But here's how I want you to bury me. Don't bury me like I'm going to stay there. You bury me in a way that you can dig my bones up quickly. Well, why do you want us to do it? We want to put you in a nice sepulcher. We want to give you a big old stone cut. No, 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 no. You don't do all that. You're wasting your money. You better bury me in a way. Wrap me up in a sack. Put me in a certain spot because you're leaving this place shortly. And when you leave this place, I want you to make sure you promise me you're going to pick up my bones and you're going to take me to the land of my father and you're going to bury me where I belong. Whatever you say, old man. And he made them promise. A dream that he had. Joseph's whole life was dreams. But the only problem with dreaming and doing all those kind of things is the fact that you got to actually get there. That's the hard part. You can dream, I want to go to college. You can dream, I want to grow up and get married and have children. You can dream whatever you want to dream. But getting there is hard. See, Joseph wasn't alone. He grew up in the same house with other brothers. He grew up with 11 other brothers. He grew up with all these other people around him. And they had dreams too. And the thing about dreams and family and life, it's all so fragile. It's all so fragile. You can have all these dreams and make some mistakes and all of a sudden a lot of it's yanked out from under you. And you got to totally rebuild it. Well, Joseph's brothers, we read a lot about them also in Genesis, the book of Genesis. Not only do we read about Joseph's story, but while we're going through it, we read stories of men like Judah. One of his brothers. And Judah decided he was going to get married to a woman that his dad didn't approve of. And he married her and started having children by her. And God's blessing was not on him. And then one of his sons decided to marry somebody he didn't belong and shouldn't have. And God killed the boy. And he had another situation. God killed that person. And Judah was kind of skittish now. And so he promised the widow of his older son. He said, I tell you what, when my young boy grows up, I'll let you marry him. But Judah was thinking, what's going to happen is he's going to marry her and God's going to kill my young boy. So Judah made the promise to her and said, I ain't really planning on following through. Life gets to be a mess. Look at the person beside you and say, life can get to be a mess. Hey, it didn't end there. She did what she was told. She dressed like a widow. She dressed in black and she went and lived among her people waiting for the day when that boy was going to grow up and become her husband. Well, she kind of started to figure out it's not working. And she heard that Judah was coming through town. So you know what she did? She dressed up like a prostitute, put a veil on where he couldn't see her face. She sat on the street corner. And when he came through and saw her, Judah's wife had already died. He's getting kind of lonely. And she said, hey, look at him. And he said, oh, well, you know, I shouldn't, but I'd like to. She said, well, if you do, I want some type of signet that say that, you know. So he gave her staff and gave her this. They kissed a little bit. He went on about his way. And then all of a sudden, we find that the good Lord was going to bless her with a child. Boy, Judah got mad. Judah heard about it and said, I'm going to have her killed. She's supposed to be waiting on this boy, and she's done messed up. And he goes to kill her, and guess who walks out of the tent? She does. And she ain't empty-handed. She's got his belt and his staff and says, hold on, big boy. It's your kid. This was a messed up family. Look at the person beside you and say, have you got any kind of stuff messed up in your life? It's not that they didn't want a good life. It's the fact that they made decisions and choices. And while Joseph was wrestling through his, they were wrestling through theirs. See, the one thing I can't save you from, the one thing like Jennifer was talking about today and things she has to battle and Miss Linda has to battle, it's the weight of life. It's just the pressure. I don't care if you're in school right now. You got to deal with pressure. You got people talking about your hairdo or talking about a bump on your nose or whatever's going on, or somebody, you know, you don't wear the same kind of tennis shoes that somebody else does, and you got Walmart shoes like me and they got Tom's or something else, some name brand, got somebody's name on it, and all of a sudden now you're not as popular, and man, it's a lot. And when you go to work, it doesn't get any easier. You can go to work and all of a sudden if you don't go out at night with other people and party with them or do the other stuff, and you don't get the promotions because you're not hanging out with everybody. You're just an outcast, and it's tough. Life has pressures, and not to add family and trying to stay married and all the other things that go on. And if you're not careful, you'll say, I've got all this precious stuff and I don't want to see it damaged. In fact, I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to be as gentle as I can with these pressures and hope. Even though you try, you don't mean to. Because what's under there is precious stuff, but the pressure of life, people's talking about you, it just weighs on you. Before you know it, life's a mess. And you just get used to living in the mess. And you hear people talking all the time. Well, you know, I'm like everybody else. And I'll go into Walmart sometimes. And I love to use this phrase. Somebody will ask me, well, how you doing? And I'll just kind of smile and I'll say, if it got any better, I had to sell some of it. And you'll be amazed. Just try that sometime. Go to work tomorrow. And when somebody asks you, how you doing today? Man, if it got any better, I had to sell some of it. And watch their reaction. They're not going to laugh and say, that's cool. They're probably going to say, huh? Say that again. I get that all the time. Why? Because their life isn't lived that way. They're not living in an expectancy. They're just trying to sort through, okay, let's see if we can keep a little, I can keep some good out of this, and maybe we'll just make something out of it. And life, they learn, is a mess. It wasn't meant to be this way, because right in the middle of all those brothers, there's a man by the name of Joseph. Remember I told you Joseph's one of my favorites. Because I grew up having to make choices and decisions, and I'm not saying I'm perfect, and I don't claim that anybody is and ever will be, and there's only one perfect person. But I knew that I was going to have pressures, and I was going to have life, and I was going to have to deal with stuff just like everybody else does. So I had to decide. Joseph's not special because he was raised in a better house or because he got different teaching or he got... No, Joseph was raised right there with all of his other brothers. Joseph was raised right there with everybody else. No difference. Except this. From the time he was young, he believed what his father had told him. He believed in the God that gives dreams and the God who does things. And so Joseph began the process of building his life. But he didn't build it the way his brothers did. Joseph decided, you know what? I'm going to build a foundation. I'm going to let God be my foundation. I'm going to let Him be the one who holds it together. Because his dad would tell him stories. He'd say, son, you know, there was a time I didn't have this limp. I was fixing to go home and meet your uncle Esau, and I was terrified, and he done told me he was going to kill me, and I spent all night wrestling with God. The God that told me to let him go, but I said, I won't let you go until you bless me. And the reason I walk with this limp, son, is because I held on and he blessed me. And not only did he bless me, but my brother didn't try to kill me. We became best friends. We moved on with our lives. And you know what? It was God who brought me through. And Jacob would explain this and teach this. And because Joseph sucked it up and he just loved to hear the stories and enjoyed it, Joseph fell in love with Jacob. And Jacob fell in love with his son Joseph in a special way. We hear about the coat of many colors, but I want to tell you what it really was. It was the fact that he had an audience for somebody who would listen to the stories. Judah wouldn't listen. Reuben wouldn't listen. And it paid off. First problem came. It's fragile. Your life is fragile. His brothers got real envious. And God said, Joseph, trust me. Don't lose your mind. Trust me. But Lord, it's fragile. Trust me. I'm gonna cover you, but I need you to trust me. But Lord, they took me and threw me in a pit and said they were going to kill me. But instead of killing me, I think they did something worse to me. They sold me. I mean, I'd rather them just kill me, Lord, than sell me into slavery. Joseph, trust me. Let our relationship be between you and me. Don't let it be between your circumstances and all that's going on. Let it be between you and me. And Joseph was sold into slavery. He ended up in the house of a man by the name of Potiphar. While at Potiphar's house, Potiphar had a wife, and she wasn't the most faithful thing. She caught an eye for Joseph. While Joseph was taking care of Potiphar's stuff, and Potiphar would be away on business, she would make moves and advances on him. And he would say, look, I can't do that. You're the boss's wife. I can't do that. One day, she finally fixed it to where there was nobody else in the house. And Joseph happened to be in there, and she made a real strong advance on him, grabbed hold of him. He didn't have but one choice. He just left the torn coat, took off running. She plowed in behind him yelling, rape, rape. There went his job. In a moment, while she did that, the pressures were still building. There in Potiphar's house, he had to choose, okay, am I going to be faithful to my God? Am I going to trust God? Am I going to depend on God? Or am I going to allow the pressures of life to crush me? He's just making choices. Look at the person beside you and say, he's just making choices. Just like we do every day. The egg is not changing. It's still an egg. Nothing has changed. It's still the same. Just choices. His final choice gets him in bottom. You ever hit bottom? Sometimes we think we hit bottom, and we've still got a long way to go. But Joseph hit bottom. He didn't hit close to bottom, he hit bottom. He ended up in prison. The only thing after prison was getting your head chopped off. So you can't go any lower and still be alive. And there in prison, God said, Joseph, trust me. Now, I don't know about you and me, but by this time, I'd be probably just like, look, God, I'm sick and tired of my life. I'm sick and tired of everything. But Joseph says, God, even while I'm in prison, going to trust you. I'm going to allow you to position me. I'm going to allow you to put me in the places you would want me to be. Nothing's changed about the eggs. Nothing's really any different around them, except God has covered them. One day Pharaoh had a dream. Ain't that amazing? Joseph's the dreamer, and Pharaoh has a dream. And he can't find anybody to solve his dream or to tell him what his dream means. And he dreams about 7 fat calves, and he dreams about 7 skinny calves. And he said, it's a weird dream. And the 7 fat calves look like they're doing good. And all of a sudden, these 7 skinny ones come along and eat them up. They eat the fat calves. And now you got 7 skinny calves chewing on the bones of those dead ones. He said, I don't know what it means. And somebody referred Joseph. They took him out of prison. They put him in front of Pharaoh. He said, can you tell me my dreams? He says, I can't, but the God that I serve can. He's the giver of dreams. He gives me dreams. And in one moment, this may not work, but we're going to try. In one moment, I used these eggs in the first service. I got 1 egg left. You think? You think it'll work? Yes or no? I'm glad y'all got faith. I'm not so sure. But we're going to try it. Nothing's changed. Just the fact. The pressure was still the same. The pressure never changed. But you know what happened? Joseph let God position him. See, I know people come to church all the time and they're like, Brother Lott, what I need God to do is pay my mortgage. And what I need God to do is help me with his car payment. You're mixing up the God that I serve. If Joseph had come to him and said, God, what I really need is you to get me out of this pit. What I really need for you to do is get me out of Potiphar's house. What I really need you to do is get me out of jail. He'd have missed God's plan. God's plan is simply this. God says, let me position you in a way so that when the pressures of life and the problems of life and the difficulties of life come upon you, as heavy as they may seem, instead of having this to look forward to, you get this. No mess, no problem. I don't know about you, but that was what I decided. And for years I thought, I don't have a good testimony. I don't have a testimony. Because I never became a 30-year drug addict. Or I never did this or did that. And God said, Tim, you have the most powerful testimony. You have a testimony that if you will let me position your life, I can do things with it that the world would say is impossible. They would say there's no way 3 eggs can hold up that brick. But it can. Because if I be for you, who dare be against you? Joseph's life was built. Do you know in our life it's the same way? The first egg represents simply this. Just like with Joseph, it's our relationship. Not with the church, not with anything. It's our relationship with God. That's why I didn't do 4 eggs. I did 1 egg. Because that 1 egg on the front has to support a lot of weight. It has to support a lot of weight. My relationship with God has to be the part that holds up more than anything else. And of all the weight that I worry about, that's where it has to begin. I have to worry that if that one doesn't hold, then the rest of it ain't going to matter. And every one of us in this room, from the littlest to the oldest, you have to decide of whether you're going to trust God. The second egg simply represents relationships. I love this weekend. I've got scratches all over me from everything, from meltdowns to bull riding. I've been on Facebook and everything else. I've kind of got my feelings hurt, I have to be honest. The meltdown, it came unplugged one time. We were all up there jumping. And so it was just a little ring around blow-up thing that holds you into it. Well, it went down, and when it came around and I landed on the ground like and fell back and rolled out because there was no more. So I rolled out on the floor, laying on the concrete. And two or three people come over, and I was thinking, thank goodness. I looked up, and every one of them had cameras. We got it, Pastor. Thank you. Help me up. We got that one. What friends we have. But no, in reality, I do. I'm surrounded by friends. See, Joseph, what's the awesome part of the story is this. Joseph, when he saw his brothers and everything got cleared up, you know what his first question was? He said, is my father still alive? I sure want to talk to my dad and tell him that all those stories he told me are true about God. What you meant for evil, God meant for good. The third represents, to Joseph, it was dreams. To us, it's the Word of God. We don't have to dream up stuff anymore. We have the Word. We can read the Word and trust that Word. So when you put all three of them together, when you put your relationship with God at the center of it, and then you build around that relationships with people in church and make friends that are good friends, not bad friends, good friends, people who want to do you good, people who encourage you, people who will help hold you up. When you do that, then you add the Word to you, and now all of a sudden you are formidable for anything that comes against you. In fact, He made a promise over you, if I be for you, who dare be against you? But it all begins with one thing. And it's the thing that scares us the most. People ask me, they say, Brother Lott, how have you been able to do this? You've been following God for 30-something years. It has to be bad days. And there are. They talked about Miss Linda a while ago. And I went by yesterday and checked on her. I walked in the hospital room. I'd like to tell you I walked in the hospital room. But I walked in and there was two of my better friends, some of my best friends. She didn't even know who I was. She'd come to just a little bit, and then she'd talk about something, and she'd talk about it. And I would think, God, this ain't right. There are days in our lives where trusting God, why are you putting this pressure on me, God? Why are we having to go through this? Why can't I just live like this without the brick, without... Tim, I've got to show you who I am. And I can only do that through the stresses of life. See, if I'd have just done this and said, now it'll hold the brick, don't worry about it, y'all wouldn't have clapped. You only clapped. I didn't even ask you to clap, but you clapped when the brick was on there and it didn't fall. You know why? Because it proved that it works. And God says, I could tell everybody that it works. I could tell everybody, look, it'll never break. But the fact is, until you see it, it doesn't work. The magician did that last night. I thought that was the coolest trick, where you had a ketchup bottle inside a paper bag. And he was joking about it, because he'd take it out and he'd say, And they say, okay, I'm putting it back in, and it's gone. Poof. And he said, it's gone. And everybody's like, we don't believe you. And he said, well, you don't believe me because I didn't, you know, look in the bag. And so he looks in the bag. Yep, it's gone. And he said, you still don't believe me. And he said, I don't guess there's anything I can do to make you believe me. And he took the bag and crumbled it up and threw it over the side. And everybody was like, oh. Why? Because he proved what he said. Alan, come help me. Like I said, not all these tricks work. We stretch our hands this way. Alan, step down front. I don't want to get water all over the stage. Just stand out at the audience. This is our victim. I mean, my friend. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pour a glass of water on top of his head, but it's not going to get any water on him. All righty then. That'd be a lot of water on you. Still be too much water on you. Yes. Okay. Alan? You think the water will miss him? Alan, you're my friend. You're my basketball buddy. I'll tell you what I'll do. That'll help. What do you think? You think it'll help? You think it'll keep the water off of him? No? I don't think so either. Alan, be still. Be very still. Did I get any water on you, Alan? You still my friend?
Oh, yeah.
Now, y'all thought that piece of paper would not keep water off his head. I can't believe. Now, do you believe a piece of paper can keep water off your head now? Yeah. You saw it. The only thing that kept that from happening is a thing called air. You can't see air. You didn't see it when I turned the glass over, but air grabbed a hold of that piece of paper and said, nope, no water. It works the same way with God. When you're standing there and you're saying, God, help me. And God says, yeah, I'm fixing to turn all of this stuff up over on you and you got to trust. God, don't kill me. I'm not going to kill you. You're safe. But you got to do the hardest thing that a human being has to do. When people say people getting saved is easy, they're lying. It is the hardest thing a human being has to do is to trust what they cannot see. When somebody is standing up and saying, I'm saved, and the world looks at them and says, well, you must be weak. I'm going to tell you something. They are the strongest people in the world because you have to live by something you can see every day and you know it doesn't even work and you still use it only because you can see it. And yet here's someone who cannot see their God, has never met them face to face. But yet, like Alan standing there saying, I trust you. If you say that water will not fall on my head, I believe that it won't fall on my head. I'm trusting in something I cannot see. I'm trusting in something I've never experienced. I've never tried this, but I'm going to do it. That's what getting saved is all about. It's knowing that there's a God who loves you, a God who cares about you. And even though you can't see Him, and even though sometimes it feels like He isn't nowhere around, He's there, like air all around you. He's there. He never leaves you nor forsakes you, but is with you every step of the way. And He asked you just like He asked Joseph. Trust me. Trust me with your life. Trust me with your tomorrow. Trust me. I'm going to give an altar call. This altar call is not about, quote, getting saved. Words thrown around so much. And what we use that word for is when we tell God we're sorry for what we did. Please forgive us and we're going to try to do better. But I want you to make a decision of whether or not you will trust God. That's a different animal altogether. That means it's going to affect what I'm listening to. It's going to affect what He speaks into my heart when He says, you don't have to do that anymore. And don't talk like that anymore. And I'm trusting Him. And God is looking for people who will trust Him. Brother Lott, it's scary. Yes, it is. That's why not everybody can do it. Very few find it. The way to hell is a broad, broad road and everybody just tracks down it. But to turn against the grain and walk down a path that's not very well trodden, very few have followed because they trusted Him. As you stand right now, I want to do this. This is just me. They won't let me sing very often. Can you put those words to Healer up? I'm going to sing that a cappella. Is that okay? That's my altar call today.
Is calling my name.
Is that okay? I want you just to close your eyes.
I hear the voice.
And I want you to ask yourself,
the voice of the one I love is calling my name.
If He's not, then I want you to make a decision. We know how big a mess life can be.
Come up
and we try to do it on our own.
And hear the angels sing.
But I want to ask you today, will you trust me?
Come up higher, my beloved.
It means you'll step out of where you are, come down here, kneel down and say, God,
come up higher.
I'm going to trust you.
And leave this world behind.
When I go back to my world, I'm trusting you.
Find me to be beautiful.
I know there's going to be some tough times, but I'm trusting you. That's all you're doing. You ain't got to say it perfectly, but when you step out, what you're telling yourself is, I'm through with me now. I'm through with me. I'm trusting you. You ready? Eyes closed.
I trust in you.
I believe you're my healer. I believe you are all I need. I believe you're my portion. I believe you're more than enough for me. Jesus, you're all I need.
You come out your handsome.
You're more than enough for me.
I am right.
You just give it to Him. If you're standing up here, come and done it and walk back, just take that moment, raise your hand and say, God, I'm trusting you. People have told me that's just the way I am. People have told me I was born this way. People have told me all kind of crazy stuff in my life. But God, I believe in you. I believe in you above my feelings, above what others say about me, above my circumstances and my situation. You are my portion. You are my healer. You are my deliverer. If you be for me, who dare be against me? I am more than a conqueror through Christ who strengthens me. I trust in you. We turn the music on now. I want you just to raise your hand. I feel Him in this place so strong. Would you take a moment and make sure that what you're doing right now is not out of emotion? It's not something that you're going to change in a day. But that you can honestly say, Lord, I'm through with me. I'm through with my decision making. Joseph had to decide, God, if you put me in a pit, I'll trust you. If you put me in a bad situation, I'll trust you. If I hit the rock bottom and I've got nothing but bars and jail cell all around me, I will trust you. God, my trust is in you completely to bring my life to what it was meant to be. I'm fragile. But with you, I'm strong.
Worshiping you, Lord.
With you, I'm strong. What you're having is a Joseph moment. You're having a Joseph moment in your life, and it's meant to start you on the path of your life where your decision making changes. Because God is positioning you. God is positioning you for the greatest move of your life. It feels like, God, you're taking everything. I'm just positioning you because the weight is going to come and the burdens that come, you can't handle them on your own. You can't handle them laying the way you're laying. You can't handle them this way. I've got to surround you with protection. I've got to position you for success. I've got to get you in a place where no matter what comes against you, it won't crack you and it won't destroy you. Pastor Lot can't manipulate you to do that. He can't try to make you feel all these emotions. All he can do is give you the opportunity to lay your life down and trust me. This morning, whether you're 6 years old, 16, or 66, God says, let me position you. Decide today, I've got to surround myself with better friends. I've got to find church friends to they can lift me up and not drag me back. Father, I got to get more of the Word in me so I'm not robbed every time somebody says something that
I need to hear from you.
But it all begins with me trusting in Him. Those three can handle anything.
What I say and do.
The Old Testament says it like this. just as a three-bound cord is hard. Those are the three. God, my relationship, and His Word.
So tell me that
I wish
you
would
never
leave. Take full advantage of what's happening right now in your life. Because God's trying to empty you of all that doubt. And all that fear. He's trying to fill you with Himself. So you don't talk the same way. You don't think the same way. You don't treat your wife or your husband. You don't treat your kids the same way. All of it's removed. Old things pass away, and all things become new. God's setting you up for something great right now. Father, I thank you right now because there's nothing I can do. Who you're speaking to and what you're calling them to trust you in. That's you. There are dads and husbands and wives in this room who need a transformation. There are young people in this room that are heading in a direction they know is not right, and it scares them, but they don't want to trust you, God. They're going to have to decide, I'm throwing that junk away. I'm throwing that lifestyle away. I'm walking in you, God. I'm trusting you. I got too big a dream to fail. Father, I praise you. Take your time. I'm going to dismiss this service, but if you want to stand right here, kneel at this altar, there is no rush for you. Until you know that God has you and that you're ready to walk out and be that person that you know God's called you to be, and you just soak it up. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope that I haven't wasted your time. I hope this weekend has been a blessing. Can I invite you to one more thing? Tonight at 5:30, the doors will open. 5:30. Look at the first side and say 5:30. And from 5:30 to 6, you can find the best seat in the house. That screen will be watching the movie. Bring your friend. We'll give you popcorn and coke when you come in. At 6 o'clock, the movie will start. We'll just see if God can do something even bigger than what we can imagine. How about it? God bless you.